Hi, this is Betty, and I'm reading from the News Gazette on Friday, September 18th. It's a little chilly out there this morning, but that could be expected since next Tuesday on the 22nd is going to be the fall equinox, and the cooler weather will begin. All right, this morning let's look at the Restore Illinois Phase 4, and it's in day 85. The Illinois cases are 268,207, with 8,392 deaths in Champaign County, 4,074 cases with 20 deaths. Douglas County has 272 cases with 6 deaths. Ford County has 130 cases with 4 deaths. Piatt has 132 cases with 0 deaths, and Vermilion County has 476 cases with 4 deaths. And information on some of the local counties. A week that started with one Champaign County resident hospitalized with COVID-19 goes into today with 7 hospitalized. Of the 900,460 new tests in Champaign County, 127 came back positive Thursday, a positivity rate of 1.3%. However, a third straight day of triple digit has raised the county's 7-day positivity rate to 1.6%. 10 Danville Correctional Center staffers have tested positive, with 3 classified as recovered. The Rantoul Schools District reported 3 cases involving students at J.W. Ader Junior High and staffers at Pleasant Acres and Broad Meadow Elementaries. A 7-day state positivity rate comparison among neighboring states. Michigan is at 2.7%. Kentucky is 3.2%. Ohio is 3.5%. Illinois is at 3.6%. Indiana is 6.1%. Missouri is 10.8%. Iowa is 13.6%. And Wisconsin is at 14.7%. And all this information was produced by Jeff D'Alessio. It's the headlines is more outdoor time may help boost kids' focus on classwork. And this is by Deborah Pressey, and this is out of a University of Illinois study. Want to help your kids stay focused on their classwork when school is being accessed from a computer at home? Try moving at least one lesson a day to an outdoor green space, such as your backyard or a neighborhood park, New University of Illinois research suggests. U of I crop sciences professor Andrea Faber-Taylor said her research was done before the COVID-19 pandemic, and it focused on Canadian kindergarten students near Toronto. But the findings also have applications for kids of other ages at a time when many schools have canceled in-person classroom learning. Specifically, the research found kindergarten students, especially girls, who spent a semester with a daily lesson in outdoor green spaces, had greater self-regulation. Basically, the ability to manage behavior and stay on task than kids who only had one outdoor lesson a week. Okay, kids who self-regulate well can control their emotions, impulses, and physical movements and focus on their lessons. Children who took part in this study included 380 kindergarten students in 9 Canadian schools, half of whom got a daily outdoor lesson and half of whom got lessons outdoors every day in all kinds of weather. The students were scored on self-regulation measures at the beginning and at the end of the semester. The research also took into account the total amount of time students spent out in outdoor green spaces while they were at school, such as recess times. The benefits of outdoor lessons were clearer for girls and for boys. At the end of a semester, girls getting daily outdoor lessons scored higher on self-regulation measures than girls getting outdoor lessons for only once a week. And findings for boys were less statistically significant. Taylor said she doesn't have a clear indication of why the impact was greater for girls. It may be that being in outdoor spaces was more restorative and supportive of girls' needs when they were stressed or fatigued, or that boys may have been less sensitive to their physical surroundings. This research adds to the body of literature suggesting both children and adults benefit from spending more time in green spaces. For families using portable devices to access classroom lessons from home, Taylor suggested parents try moving them outdoors for at least part of the day, provided that the outdoor settings is quiet and free of distractions. It's better also not to wait for the weekend to get kids outside, but to form a routine in which kids get that outdoor time every day. It's also her hope that research raises the value of outdoor settings as schools resume in-person classes and will encourage them to move some lessons outdoors to change up the environment and the air being breathed. Not all kids have access to outdoor green space at home. They spend a lot of hours at school, especially kids in before and after school care. By the time they get home, there's not a lot of time to go to a park. And there may be another benefit down the road to getting kids outdoors more. Taylor said studies have shown kids with access to green spaces grow up to be more protective of the environment as adults. So that's kind of interesting. And, you know, we've all known for a long time that outdoors always supposed to bring positive emotions and better mental well-being. The next article is There Was No Interest to Seize Him, and this is by Ben Zigerman, and it's out of Chicago, but it's about a local man. In arguments Thursday before the Seventh Circuit Court of Appeals, an attorney for the estate of a well-known Champaign homeless man who died during interaction with police in 2016 compared him to the town drunk in the Andy Griffith Show. A federal judge ruled in November that Champaign police officers acted reasonably on November 16, 2016, when they called for an ambulance and held Richard Ritchie Turner, 54, on the ground and handcuffed him. Mr. Turner became unresponsive during the incident, which took place shortly after 9 a.m. that Wednesday on the 600 block of South 6th Street. And he was pronounced dead about 45 minutes later at Carle Foundation Hospital. The excessive force lawsuit filed by his sister was dismissed, but she appealed the ruling in December. On this day of the incident, there's no gun, there's no knife, he didn't threaten anybody, he wasn't doing anything other than having a mental illness seizure, Henderson said, so there was no compelling government interest on this particular day to seize him. Judges Amy Barrett, Michael Kahn, and David Hamilton had several questions for Henderson, but none for Champaign Attorney Justice Justin Bruner, who represented the city and its officers. Barrett asked what the officers should have done. They stop and he resists. He won't stop and he's moving and pushing back, she said. They're trying to get control, and they can't. What should they have done? Henderson replied, they should have, one, waited for the ambulance that they called. Number two, they should have just continued to walk with him. What they shouldn't have done, they shouldn't have jumped on top of him. Bruner argued that the officers used the minimum amount of force necessary to get Mr. Turner to the hospital. They tried to reason with him. That was unsuccessful. They tried to use minimal force to stop him. That was unsuccessful, he said, and whenever he reacted in a struggle that could be characterized as violent, they used a reasonable amount of force without crushing, beating him, or gratuitously causing any injury. Raised in Champaign, Mr. Turner was a talented football player at Central High School and was remembered by friends as kind-hearted, despite his mental issues and limited means. The lawsuit named the city of Champaign, as well as Sergeant Tom Frost and officers Michael Talbot, Andrew Wilson, and Chris Young. The autopsy report found that while the officer's restraint could be a contributing factor to Mr. Turner's death, it was not the cause. Instead, it found that Mr. Turner had an enlarged heart and died of a heart attack, according to Magistrate Judge Eric Long in his decision dismissing the case. Champaign County State's Attorney Julia Reitz also determined that there was no evidence to support criminal charges against anyone in relation to Mr. Turner's death. Okay, another article on the front page. The title, It's Her Pleasure. And this is by Anthony Zillis. Janelle Pleasure couldn't walk 3 feet without feeling dizzy or nauseous in the months after she suffered a stroke in 2018. The brain power required to make her feet move forward one after the other was simply too much. She tried the games and activities suggested by her doctors to help her brain recover, but she couldn't focus, and they wound up making it worse. Then, laying in bed one day, she looked over to her recycling bin. She pulled out a newspaper and began to roll it. She took out plastic bottles, aluminum cans, and glue, and began attaching them together. In the end, she had made what she called an African doll. Then she made more. I noticed that it wasn't hard to think, said Pleasure, an artist by trade. It didn't take much to just roll the paper, and it didn't hurt my fingers. It didn't hurt my brain to think about how that process would go, and I just kind of kept going with it. The more I kept going, the more I could retain as far as information, as far as being able to focus, and having things not hurt, and it just stuck. Her physical therapist was amazed, she said. She could walk a few steps without exhausting herself. She could pick something up, put it back in the correct place, and remember where she set it. She was a long way from where she started, of course. Pleasure is a seamstress among other artistic endeavors that include poetry, dance, and jewelry design. But after the stroke, she couldn't remember how to sew. Always environmentally conscious, she had made recycled art before, but never like in the years since her stroke. She began to make jewelry and clothing, including pieces she made for the Heartland Maker Fest fashion show. Then she began using the art form in broader ways. From there, it became a way to make a statement and to use my voice politically and emotionally, where I feel like if I were to speak the words that I felt, I don't think it would come across the way I intended it to. Pleasure's latest exhibit of recycled art is on display at Randolph Street Community Gardens as part of the 40 North The Great Art Doors program, which involves 10 pieces being installed across Champaign-Urbana. While she didn't choose the location, Pleasure was thrilled with it. Since her stroke, the mother of three boys has used her plot in the garden to help put enough food on the table. Around 50 to 60% of the food the family of four eats, she said, comes from plants she grows herself. Her piece represents different issues and concerns racing through her mind, including gun violence, food, and racism. In a black box, two guns point at a head with a muzzle mouth and a body part made of food. The names of victims of gun violence are plastered to the body. It's a shadow box which tells a story in and itself. We are all standing in the shadows in some way to form or form. And as you look at the piece, it becomes kind of disconcerting because there are so many elements to it and so many ways your eyes can go. And again, that is another sense that I wanted to bring to the art piece because that is the way society is right now. There are just too many things for us to look at and we can't focus. So it brings that out and it shows the garden. So we see a lot of food represented there and it nourishes our bodies, but it also comes back to the ground as compost. Then you're looking at the gun violence, but you're looking at the branches as well, and you're trying to get through the murkiness of everything and trying to make sense. Pleasure still isn't completely recovered from her stroke. Her motor skills aren't all the way back, she said, and she has trouble typing for long periods. That hasn't completely been a bad thing for someone whose life was always fast-paced as she kept up with her family and artistic interests. It put a lot of different things in perspective, trying to make time for things that are really important. It's not like I was neglectful or anything, but we were always on the go. Having this moment to be able to slow down, to be really able to think through processes, it allowed my art to grow. I came up with, in my opinion, better things because I have ability to slow down. And that's a wonderful thing, using her art to bring her back from having a stroke. And also in there it says, more to see, the work of 9 other local artists is on display at outdoor locations around Champaign and Urbana as part of 40 North the Great Outdoors Project. There's Barry Abrams Tensikriti at the MLK Trail in Champaign. Ika's Points of View Learman Neighborhood Community Garden in Urbana. Greg Stallmeyer's Rainbow Connections at Kaufman Lake in Champaign. Keenan Daly's Unchained in Douglas Park in Champaign. Kinsey Fitzgerald's Mother and Child at Chief Shimauger Park in Urbana. Lisa Kessler's Prairie Dance, Sunset Ridge Park, Champaign. Michael Darren, Catapult Earth, Anita Purvis Nature Center in Urbana. Nathan Westerman's Transfiguration in Victory Park, Urbana. And last, Sierra Murphy's Bread and Roses, South Ridge Park, Urbana. So those are more local artists and their artworks. Next, we have Ask the Admin, and it's a daily question for the Champaign-Urbana Public Health District's Julie Pride. The question is, can you please explain the nomenclature involved when the recent COVID-19 death notices in Champaign-Urbana have said died with COVID-19? Is there a distinction between those who have died from COVID-19 versus with COVID-19 in the eyes of health departments? Her answer, this language is not really used by health departments or health care providers. It is important to understand that all reporting is done based upon a national case definition. Additionally, death certificates list immediate cause, underlying cause, and significant conditions contributing to cause. An example on a death certificate would list immediate cause as respiratory failure with underlying cause of obesity or COPD, and significant conditions contributing to death as COVID-19 or influenza, or whatever led to their respiratory failure. The Illinois Department of Public Health requires reporting of the following COVID-19 cases. Cases that meet confirmatory laboratory evidence, and that means a detection of SARS-CoV-2 RNA. These cases are classified as confirmed cases. Deaths in cases that meet confirmatory laboratory evidence, these cases are classified as confirmed cases. deaths in cases that meet vital records criteria, SARS, COVID-2 as cause of death or contributing to death with no confirmatory lab testing for COVID-19. These cases are classified as probable cases. And it's still confusing. So that's Ask the Admin question today. And let's go to Jay Simpson, who writes for the News Gazette. He has a column Wednesday, Friday, and Sunday. And the title of his article today is, "The Club has been a special place for a lot of us." This week's news about the Don Moyer Boys and Girls Club triggered a flood of positive memories. And this news was Sam Banks, the executive director, is retiring next year. The club was a place to be as a kid. It was our safe haven. It's a place where kids like myself created great bonds with others. A place where a lot of us experienced certain things for the first time. In my day, there was a YMCA day camp, a Park District camp, and the club, as we called it. Most of us at the club couldn't afford the other two day camps and or didn't have the transportation to get there. The club provided transportation and they fed us. In our parents' eyes, it was a win-win. Everything was family-oriented there, and that made it an even better experience. Yes, we were children, and we mouthed off sometimes, but at the end of the day, we respected all the staff to the fullest. We knew if we disrespected them, they would call our moms. Notice I said moms, because most of them were single mothers working hard, trying to raise and provide for multiple children on their own. When they got a call from the club about their child misbehaving, we knew it wasn't going to be pretty, and that's what kept the respect level there at all times. I wish today's generation could experience some of the fun times we had. Maybe they would appreciate that place a little bit more. The club will always mean a lot to me, seeing as it's where I played on my first organized basketball team, met my first girlfriend, made some amazing friends, and even got in my first fight. I did a lot of growing up in that building and wouldn't be the person I am now without it. I want to thank every Boys and Girls Club staff members who had to deal with us because I know we were a handful. Nothing went unnoticed, and we appreciate you for everything. See, the bird's eye view today in the paper is Villa Grove, and it shows an aerial view looking southeast at Villa Grove over the Embera River, which flows through the town. And see, there was a Zoom form this week for the different people running for office. And this week's, it was the Champaign County Board for District 4 and District 5. And for District 4, the Republican candidate, Brad Pasalacqua, said the board's biggest challenge will be a budget crisis because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We can expect lower grants from the federal government and from the state government. We've had some assistance along the way to fill some potholes, but I really think that we're going to be in a budget crisis based on this economic slowdown. And the Democratic candidate's view, Kelly Lee Mansfield, agreed that COVID-19 was the county's biggest issue and focused on the needs residents are facing. We have housing issues now, she said. We have food insecurity going on. We have evictions looming, and we're going to need grants and money to help them get past the pandemic and back to getting jobs. And the highlights from District 5 candidates. For the Democrat, Jordan Humphrey said the board has an obligation to address structural racism in the county. I think we can do that through policy, he said. A lot of that happens at the city level, but we can have an amazing partnership with our cities. to actually put into place discrimination protections, to put into place policies, to maybe look at reparations and what that means for a community that has legalized marijuana. And his opponent in District 5, Republican incumbent John Rector, said he'd address structural racism by doing more to improve education. If you get to seventh grade and you can't read the textbook, it's not going to work, he said. In my mind, that would be a great way, everybody working together on education of all at-risk youth. And then there's a little blurb along there. It says, worth a watch. The League of Women Voters of Champaign County has two new videos on its website and YouTube channels, part of its Grow the Vote 2020 campaign. Online voter registration, your first step to voting, is a six-minute how-to. And Vote from Home, Safe, Secure, Easy, is a three-minute overview on how to request and return mail ballots. It also explains measures being taken in Champaign County to make voting by mail easy and secure. And we have a title of an article called Body Found Near Where a Missing Man's Bike Was Discovered. And this is out of Rantoul, and it's by Dave Hinton. Searchers found a body near where a missing Rantoul man's bicycle was discovered earlier this month. Rantoul Police Sergeant Rodney Sullivan said police were dispatched to a field about a mile northeast of the village Wednesday evening. The body was found less than a mile from where the bicycle belonging to David Franklin, 62, had been located about a week and a half before. Sullivan said the body was found in a waterway about a quarter mile east of the intersection of County Roads 3100 North and 1800 East. Champaign County Sheriff's deputies and Rantoul police officers confirmed what was reported to be human remains. Member of the Champaign County Coroner's Office took the remains, and an autopsy is scheduled for today to identify the remains and determine a cause of death. Sullivan said the remains appeared to belong to a man. The area had been previously searched by helicopter and drone, Sullivan said. It is believed the remains were not in that location at the time of the aerial search and could have been moved by animals. On September 3rd, a relative reported to Rantoul Police that Franklin was missing or endangered. Franklin's bicycle was discovered September 6th at County Road 3100 North near the intersection of County Road 1900 East. There was no obvious damage to the bike, which, according to a person who called the police department, was believed to have been at the location for about a week and a half. About 20 volunteers spent several hours the day before searching the north side of Rantoul for Franklin. And we have Top of the Morning by Jim Rossall. Our newsroom celebrated a streak we're mighty proud of Thursday afternoon, 4 months later than planned, in a virtual awards banquet hosted by the Illinois Press Association. The News Gazette was awarded the Mabel S. Shaw Memorial Trophy, given to the state's best medium-sized newspaper. It's the sixth consecutive year we've won Ole Mabel, the longest ongoing first-place streak by any newspaper in the six circulation divisions. This one was special for more than that. The News Gazette changed ownership in late 2019, and several of our former colleagues had a hand in number six, as well as the first five. It's also our first in the community media group era, and another reason to thank those print and online readers who continue to rely on us for professional, diverse, and local coverage. And that's the first half of the reading today. We'll take a short break now and return with the second half of reading of the News Gazette on Friday, September 18th.